Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome. We will be having conversations with everyone in the Democratic primary who's running to become the next mayor of the city of Baltimore. One of those people running was here with us just a couple weeks ago. She is the city mayor now in the city of Baltimore, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, and joins us in the studio once again. And Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, welcome. Good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Is that better? Can you hear now?
Yes.
Sorry, it was turned down too far.
That's all right.
As we begin, let me remind you all, I should have done this before I introduce the mayor, but I'll do this way. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland's Inflammatory Bowel Disease Program, a multidisciplinary care service dedicated to relieving symptoms and improving the quality of life of IBD patients. For more information, 1-800-492-5538, or you can go to steinershow.org, click on the University of Maryland Medical System banner, and the information will be there as well. Now, many of you called in yesterday during our program with reporters who are covering this race. Had many questions. We took them down. We'll be asking some of those, but many of you have questions. I suggest you begin calling in now. We'll get to your questions as quickly as possible at 410-319-8888. If you'd rather write them, you can write to steinershow@gmail.com. You can log into the Mark Steiner or the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page and ask your questions there. We'll be looking at that Facebook page as well. And get your questions on the airwaves here. 410-319-8888. Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake, who's seeking to get the Democratic nomination to run for mayor in the general election and to be the next mayor of Baltimore. Well, welcome. Once again, welcome. Good to have you here.
Certainly my pleasure to be here again.
So one of the things that came up yesterday was interesting. A lot of things that came up yesterday were interesting by the callers were calling in. And one talked about why there's so much apathy in this election. And why there's so few people turn out. 2007, if I have the number right, 21 or 23% of the people turned out to vote, of registered voters, not even eligible voters, to this election. And a lot of people think, I should say, that we should have a nonpartisan election. So we should have an election where people run for office. Then the top two vote getters, if they're not 50%, get to run. It would activate more people to be in that election, and the election itself should be taken out of the 2007, out of the odd year, because it kind of pushes people away from participation. We need to change the process by which we run this election, how we run it, to get more people involved and feel like they have a stake in what's happening.
So I certainly agree that it would have been better for voter turnout for us to be in line with the presidential election, and we actually tried that. Our efforts were thwarted by the state legislature that didn't do the companion legislation that was needed in order to change the date. So we had that kind of quirky series of elections, where this quirky term, I mean, a few years ago. So I think that there are ways that we can increase voter turnout. We certainly tried. We would have better success if we tried again. But it is a right and a privilege for all citizens. And, you know, especially when I talk to high school kids, I want to get them in the mindset of voting, of having their voices heard. And my hope is with the Get Out the Vote that we've been doing and a lot of the field operations and calling, while there may seem to be apathy, I hope it translates. There's under the surface, there's a deep interest in the future of our city, and we'll have a decent turnout.
Why do you think the turnout is so low then? Why do you think so many people do not turn out? And what do you think about the idea of a nonpartisan election that allows everyone to run, as they do in many other cities, like New Orleans, many other places have these nonpartisan elections where people run without people may know your party affiliation, but not necessarily as Democrat or Republican. And that they run and are, and then may the best candidate win.
I think for people like you that are, you know, that talk for a living.
Like me?
Yeah, that talk for a living, that sounds interesting. But, Baltimore.
But many cities do it. Hey, huge cities do it. It's not just me talking about it. There are a lot of places that do it around the country.
A lot of places that do a whole bunch of stuff. It doesn't mean that it would increase voter turnout in Baltimore.
Why do you think it wouldn't?
I don't have any reason to think that it would.
Well, then what do you attribute the low voter turnout to? What do you think there seems to be so much apathy when it comes to these elections? Do you think that people feel like no matter how and who they vote for, they just feel powerless, they're not part of it? I mean, what do you think it is that force that gets people, that the reason why people do not vote?
The problem is you're intimating that this is only happening in Baltimore. And I think voter apathy is something that we're seeing all over the country. And unfortunately, this race has lent itself to the same reasons why I think that there's a low voter turnout, and that is the negativity of so many races. On the national scene, we see it so much with the congressional races and the Senate races. You know, they're just so negative. And the race for mayor, you know, the headlining race for this election, my opponents have been mostly negative the whole time. That turns people off.
Should we open the phones? Get a caller in here, then a question here. We're here with Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, of course, who's seeking to keep her job as mayor of the city of Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Monique in Charles Village, you're on the air.
Hi, Mayor. I just wanted to thank you for your response to the hurricane and the earthquake. No other candidate was out and about and attending to her constituents as well as you were. And I just want to thank you.
Thank you. I hope your power is back on, and I hope that you fared well and listened to the warnings and got your water and your batteries and everything you needed.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are about 68,000 people from what I've last heard.
66
that are still out without
6,600.
Power. 6,600.
6,643.
Okay. One of the things we talked to,
and we're still pushing. Just FYI, you know, I went out to the headquarters of BG&E with the police commissioner, the fire chief, my health department representatives, and members of my senior team to talk to the president of BG&E about getting additional resources in Baltimore and about making sure that our vulnerable populations, the our citizens who are least able to weather this storm, weather the power outages, got the attention that they needed. And I was pleased. You know, it is taking a long time. We understood that it was going to take a long time, but I'm also pleased that we worked hard to make sure that the senior centers were back online, the medical facilities were back online. I think there's one school that's still without power, but we continue to push for more resources, and I'm glad to say that we're getting those resources to make some really significant impact in lowering the numbers of people without power.
One of the things that came up yesterday, and I think that most people who see how this works knows, it takes a while to get 740,000 homes in an entire area back online. Doesn't happen overnight, and crews are coming from several states to help do that. Yesterday, though, in terms of what you just said, yesterday one of the callers made a suggestion. We had a long talk about it, which is, does it make sense to try to, as policy, to turn on, to go after the to restore power to the poorest communities first, rather than other communities, as a logical, clear policy. Because, as someone said yesterday, the Sun reporter, who interviewed people in more affluent neighborhoods, well, we can go rent a hotel, we can buy a generator, we can save our food. Hello? Can we get back? I think we just lost our power here. Can't hear a thing? We can hear you on the air. There you go. Now, we're back. And one of the things that was brought up here was that we should do poor communities first, because wealthy communities can buy generators and they can go to hotels, and the poor communities need to be serviced first, which is not the policy. Should that be the policy?
I made it clear when I met with the president of BG&E that the needs of the population in Baltimore are different than in other jurisdictions. I talked about our concentration of people who are living below the poverty line. I talked about our population, our concentration of vulnerable elderly, and I made them understand the need for additional resources, and we got those additional resources, and we're making our progress, I think, is very good comparatively. And the thing that I don't think that you don't understand until you're sitting out there and you're seeing all the grids on the wall, you know, the pictures on the wall of the grids and all of that stuff, that while we were dealing with over 700,000 in the state, it's up and down the East Coast. So while we're fighting for resources in the state, North Carolina is fighting for resources, you know, New Jersey's fighting for resources, Pennsylvania's fighting for resources, and everyone is leaning on their mutual aid agreements. And, you know, the other states that have resources, everyone is fighting for those. So it is a very daunting task to get that many people back online. And I was glad that I was able to fight for our citizens to get the resources that we need to make a dent much quicker. In that, as well as, you know, we've been there to support people who don't have their power on yet. I've visited senior centers. We've been delivering ice and MREs or meals ready to eat and food vouchers and things like that.
Let's go back to the phones. We'll go in between my questions and your questions here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. In our final series of conversations with everyone in the Democratic primary, we're here with Stephen Rawlings-Blake, who is the mayor of Baltimore City. And Aaron, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome, Aaron.
Well, you know.
Aaron, you there?
We keep flipping out.
Yeah, we keep. Aaron, I'm sorry, man. That was not on purpose. If you call back, we'll get you right back on the air, I promise. So 410-319-8888, we'll put you right back on the air. Don't know what happened there. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi, Mayor. My name is Kate. I was just calling. I mean, it's easy to see the issues with the Grand Prix with traffic, but
we are dropping calls. Maybe we can get someone to help us undrop the calls. 410-319-8888. Folks, don't hang up. We're holding on. We're going to check to see what's going on and get you all back on the air. So let me jump back into my conversation with the mayor, and then we'll get you back online here, I promise. 410-319-8888. Bruce Lithibus, I think that's Aaron calling back in. We'll get you back on the air to ask questions of the mayor. Okay, let's go. You mentioned police.
When did I mention police?
You mentioned Bielefeld.
Oh, okay.
So that was close enough. Got me spurred on to ask a question about this. And the question is, and every person running for mayor has a different platform about what to do about the police. Mm-hmm. Some calling for the commissioner's head, some not. Clearly, you're not. But one of the things that you did call for was the hiring of more police.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Cherry and others, too, from the Police Institute at Hopkins, have suggested that maybe we have a force, I'm just looking at numbers here, that we're funded for 3,146 positions. As of August, we have 2,943 officers on the force.
I didn't hear that. Say that again.
We are funded for 3,146 positions and have now 2,943 on the force. And the idea that some people are saying, basically a stronger idea, is not hiring more police, but to pay our police more money, so that every 5 years we don't start losing a slew of police to surrounding jurisdictions, which pay much more money. Baltimore County, Howard County pay a great deal more than we do in the city. We could keep our officers longer. And to take them out of specialized units, to put them on the street, which is us, and to kind of, to as they've done in L.A. and many other cities where they've really cut down on crime and even have less police per capita than we do in L.A., which is a much bigger city with kind of more intense problems in some ways. And so I'd like you to comment on that, vis-a-vis the idea you have of hiring more police.
It is Bob Cherry's job to advocate for higher pay for his membership.
Okay, maybe I'm making a mistake of using Bob Cherry's name. There are a lot of people beyond Bob Cherry
I know who's not saying we need less police, and that's every community association I've gone to. I've never been to one community association where they said that they would like to see fewer police on the street. Never. Never. That being said, our strategy, targeting the most violent offenders, fighting for tougher gun laws, putting the officers on the street, and working with communities, is working. This August, if you look at last August and this August, we've had a 44% reduction in homicide. This August, we had the lowest number of homicides since 1979. Our strategies are getting results.
Long term, though, in terms of how you manage a police force, the question is, should we be paying our officers more rather than hiring more police to keep the police we have, get them out of specialized units and their desks, put them on the street? When the commissioner first got here, he said, we're going to get policemen we're going to get them out of their cars and walking. That hasn't happened very much. So,
based on what?
Based on the commissioner saying it on my show here not too long ago. They hasn't been able to get it done. The question is, I mean, is there are arguments to be made that people are making about a different kind of police strategy?
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know what your thoughts are about that. It's not just Bob Cherry. There are other folks who are making the same similar comments.
Again, and I respect the opinion. But when I talk to community members, when I talk to leaders who are working hand-in-hand with the police every day to create a safer city, they are asking me to make police a priority. They are asking me to make sure that we don't shortcut the police department, that we don't play politics with the police department, that we keep pace with attrition and make sure that we have enough feet on the street. While I respect their opinion, I know that what we're doing is working. Again, August to August, last August to this August, 44% reduction. This August, the lowest
in murders
and homicides.
Other crime has gone up, though.
I didn't bring all the every statistic with me. I know that one thing that leads on the news, whether it's on television or in the newspaper, is the number of homicides. In August, we've had the lowest number of homicides since 1979.
One last thought on this. I mean, when we're talking about these other kind of crimes that take place, and the sense of fear that many people, especially in the poor working class neighborhoods of our community, feel more than they do in more affluent neighborhoods, that more police could be accomplished by, some people would argue, by taking people out of the specialized units and putting them back on the streets. And keeping them in the city, they don't flee to the counties for jobs, might be in the long run a better policy. I'm not saying it is or isn't. I'm just seeing the arguments being made. I'm curious your thoughts.
I think our strategy is working. I think while it is not perfect, and while there's clearly more work to do, I'm confident that we're heading in the right direction. We do need to get a better balance, and I think I probably talked about this the last time I was here a couple weeks ago. We have communities where homicide is not the number one
right.
issue, and quality of life crimes need more attention. And that's why we're working so hard. When I talk about working with communities, community leaders, that's what we're doing. We're out there on the Citizens on Patrol. We're out there at the association meetings trying to get a handle on how we can develop that balance neighborhood by neighborhood. Because just like you can't pick up L.A.'s police department and their strategy and their deployment and bring it and plop it down in Baltimore, you can't every neighborhood is different, and you have to understand and appreciate the uniqueness of the neighborhoods and be responsive to their needs. So we are doing that. We are finding ways to deal with the specific crime issues neighborhood by neighborhood.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Did we lose our calls? Got them? Yes. Aaron, you're on the air. All right. We'll see what's going on. What's happening with the phones here. I guess we'll find out in a minute. Folks, keep calling in. We will get you on the air. I apologize for the phone disruption. 410-319-8888. We do want to get you here. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We will get your calls. If we can't calls, we'll get your emails. 410-319-8888. Jump on our Facebook page. Mayor Stephen Williams-Blake is in the studio to take your questions. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And if we get that things lights up again, then we'll... get you back right on the air. They have to reset the system. They're doing it, and then we'll have you back on the air. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, going back to the questions that I was going to raise. The newspaper made a great deal of the homestead property tax credit that they said you and your husband received a house in Howard County. They say the same thing about Frank Conaway, and. Could you comment on that now and how that happened?
Yeah. My husband discovered over just about 2 years ago that he was receiving a homestead tax credit on his property that he owns in Columbia. He found out about it on his own. He voluntarily went and paid the bill when he realized that there was an error. He didn't blame anyone. He didn't make excuses. And that's how we're raising our daughter. When you have a problem, you fix it. You don't blame anyone. You fix it whether someone's looking or not, and that's what he did.
And, of course, one of the other candidates had a similar problem, Frank Conaway. Many elected officials have seemed to, in the Sun reports, have gone through this. So what that does is set up, I think, in a lot of people's minds, a sense of a sense that is there something askew with politics, with people elected to public life, that this seems to be happening, and why does it seem to come up over and over again?
I can't really speak to that as far as people in public life. I can say for us, my husband looked into it, and as soon as he found out about it, he paid the bill. He didn't intend to take advantage of a credit that he wasn't entitled to, and that's evidenced by the fact that he found out on his own, paid it without prompting, and certainly didn't make any excuses for it.
410-319-8888. Let's try one more time. Aaron, you're on the air. See if this time works.
Hello?
Aaron, you're there. Let's try again. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm here. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome.
Well, Madam Mayor, you talked about the low voter turnout early on. And quite frankly, the reason that is in this city is because of politicians such as yourself who haven't been honest with the people of this city in a lot of areas. And what I'm hearing about your crime plan is just laughable to me because I just don't believe you. And I'm a community leader who works hard, works with police and community, and I just don't see it.
What don't you believe?
Everything she said, quite frankly. When we have murders going on in our city almost every night, I just find it incredulous. I wonder what city she lives in.
All right, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Comment, Madam Mayor? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Elizabeth. You're on the air.
Hi, Mayor Rawlings-Blake. I just wanted to let you know that I really appreciate all the hard work you've been doing, how you came in with the blizzard and this hurricane and this earthquake. You've handled everything in a timely manner, and I really, really appreciate your hard work. Thank you for working so hard for the city.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No problem.
410-319-8888. We'll get some more calls in here since you've all been lining up trying to get on the air, and these phones seem to be rolling now. We're talking with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake in our series of conversations with those who are seeking to become the Democratic nominee for mayor of the city, 410-319-8888. And Tony, you're on the air.
Yeah, Madam Mayor, how you doing?
Good,
how
thank you.
Feeling? I support you as a sister, but my question to you is that every time all the questions they're asking you, everything is all right, everything under control. What happened to the community policing when you was growing up in Baltimore? The officer come to your house, all there is gone. Majority of the police officers see now out there wasting the resources in 7-Eleven drinking coffee while the killings is going on in our neighborhood. Do you realize that?
So thank you very much for your call. And, I think there's, when I say that I'm pleased, I think that it's remarkable that our homicide rate is the lowest it's been since 1979. That is not me saying that I'm satisfied. That is me saying that I understand that we're still a violent city and we need to do more. And we do need to work more with the community. We have, some areas of the city where our police and community relationships are wonderful, where they're thriving. I go to some districts. I go to Southern District. They have a police officer of the month, and they give the police officers, dinner for two and these type of things. And I go to other neighborhoods, and they are they every month they're recognizing officers for their hard work and their relationships. But that's not everywhere, and that's what I'm working towards. And I know that by continuing to focus neighborhood by neighborhood on what communities need, and being responsive to that, we'll get to a point where those relationships are working all over the city.
410-319-8888 is the number here. As I promised, we'll get to some of these calls before I jump back in here, since you've all been waiting so long and so patiently. Who's been waiting the longest? Let's see. I think we go to William in Baltimore. You're on the air. William, you're on the air.
Hi. Good evening.
Welcome.
My concern is this. I believe the mayor had a prospective proposal, a 1% property tax for, let's say, 8 years reduction for the citizens of Baltimore. Yet and still, Baltimore Community Development and or other businesses that do business with Baltimore get thousands, if not at least $1 million property tax and or tax credit incentives. Why not the citizens a better deal?
So I'm not 100% sure of exactly what he's referencing, but I will speak to my property tax plan. This is my emphasis, that this is not a campaign ploy. This is a responsible and achievable first step in Baltimore having a more competitive property tax rate. With respect to incentives, you know, people forget how many incentives there are for the average citizen to purchase a home. If you take a look at the work that we're doing around mm-hmm. creating incentives to buy vacant properties, you know, there's a bundle of over 50 different incentives you can use as an everyday citizen in order to make buying a home in Baltimore more affordable and to create those incentives so we can increase and grow Baltimore. That being said, when it comes to economic development financing tools, I think it's important that we end the trend of pitting a downtown against the neighborhoods. It's not productive. To think it is a way to make sure that we don't grow as one city. You know, we have given there have been pilots and TIFs in projects that have created and strengthened neighborhoods. Look at Clipper Mill. Look at Frankfurt Estates. Look at what Belvedere Square has done for that community. So we do have those types of projects. And, you know, we took a look. You know, we took back at the different plans that have come up. We've never turned down a viable community-based project that was requesting a TIF or a pilot. We don't have a history of that. If it's going to create jobs, if it's going to strengthen neighborhoods, I'm going to fight for it. And whether it's in Harbor East or whether it's in Belvedere Square, I'm going to fight just as hard.
Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake is with us. She is here to talk about her race for mayor, her plans for the future of the city. In the coming days, we're going to be all of the candidates are coming on the show between now and the eve of the election. Who are running for mayor of the city of Baltimore. The number here is 410-319-8888. We're going to take a very brief break and return with the mayor and the next callers up on our screen here are Adam. And then after Adam will be Julian. And then after Julian will be, I think we just had William, didn't we? Will be Andre. So we'll be right back. So Adam, Julian, Andre, next three callers up, and I'll come back with a question of my own. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And we're here with Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, who is seeking to become remain mayor of Baltimore City. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow at gmail.com. And we're going to go right back to the phones in just 1 second and add the next caller up, and then Julian. And then Andre, and then Danielle, I'll get to your calls right after this. 1, 2, 3, 4. After this first question, we'll come right back to your questions. Following what you were saying about we shouldn't set this as you're saying as a fabricated battle. You didn't use that word, but between interpreting your words between downtown and neighborhoods.
It's not. I mean, the thing is, it's a real battle. I mean, people honestly. You know, a lot of people believe that that's the only way to get neighborhood development is to say that we can't have any development in downtown. But there would be no redeveloped Mondawmin without these incentives. I would not have my Target and my Marshalls without these incentives. I mean, beyond me, though, there are over 1,000 jobs that are created by the renovations at Mondawmin. You know, it's my hangout spot. And it was made possible because of the, I think, appropriate use of financial incentives.
Let's not forget Forever 21.
I am way beyond Forever 21. I can look in the windows.
But to push that, what I wanted to talk about, mm-hmm. we talked about this a little bit before, the last time you were on. And since that time, the Baltimore Brew has written a story and wrote one, I think it was this morning they put one out, mm-hmm. that about David Cordish, mm-hmm. who is seeking a huge tax break and a place where he only already pays $1,000 a year for the one piece of property. He wants a tax break for the piece behind it and the parking lot behind that, and that he and his companies have given your campaign $21,000. There's nothing illegal about giving $21,000 to your campaign, but there is two questions. There's a sense of propriety. People seem to think, well, you look at that, developers have a huge amount of power. I can hide my donations legally. I can give you a check for $4,000, but I can multiply that 5, 6, 7 times by hiding it through every little LLC I have without my name being on the sheet. You can never know unless a reporter digs it up that it's me giving you the money, whether it's David Cordish or any other major developer. Let me just stop there. There's three parts to this question. Let me stop there. I mean, don't you see that as a problem?
We follow the law. My campaign makes sure we go through the donations on a regular basis to make sure that no one has given more than the law allows. We follow the letter of the law when it comes to donations. That being said, the under that question is, if someone gives you enough money, Mayor, will you vote with them or will you support them? And, the answer to that unasked question is absolutely not. I mean, when I ran for city council president, my finance chair hated when I mentioned this. But he was my finance chair. He raised money. He helped me organize my campaign. And he came before me on the Board of Estimates. He had an issue. And without hesitation, I voted against it because it was the right thing to do for the city. So if someone thinks that they are going to have favor with my administration based on donations, large or small, they're mistaken. And I'm blessed. I have been very successful in fundraising, and it's important. It's certainly a sign of the level of support that I have throughout the community. I have over 1,000 I have more than 1,000 individual donors who believe in my vision and my ability to move Baltimore forward.
Do you think that should be changed? Do you think that corporations should be allowed to put that kind of money into anybody's campaign, hide who they are, not be forced to have that information out in the public at the beginning? And the fact that he now has this huge tax break he's asking for before the Baltimore Development Corporation, and you said you're not going to make the decision will not be made now until after the election.
So
it sounds manipulative to many people when they hear that.
Well, of course, because that's how you've said it. Said that he's hiding it, and the financial rules are very clear. Individuals can give, businesses can give. Every donation has been accounted for. So there's when you say hiding it. You are answering your own question in the way that
you've asked. People can give money and not say who it comes from. If an investigative reporter had not gone under the facts to find out who actually owned these companies and started them, no one would ever know that it was that corporations under one person are giving a lot of money to one candidate.
So, again, underneath that question, you're talking about ethics. And
yes.
The last thing I did as city council president and one of the first things I did as mayor was introduce and then sign ethics reform in city government. It was very important to me to restore faith and trust in government. We closed loopholes. We made the ethics board more independent, more professional. And I'm proud of the work that we're doing around ethics reform in the city. And that being said, again, we follow the letter of the law. And I know that the state contributions that the rules and regulations, a lot of people spend a lot of time drafting those and creating those to make sure that that individuals could give, that businesses could give, and make sure that when they do it, they're transparent and they're putting their name. You have to put, I think, your address as well and other contact information.
But clearly, you know, that it can be kind of it can be smudged and hidden by the way the laws are written. The question is, should that be changed? I mean, a lot of people are worried about the big money in politics. Would it go a long way if your office said, Baltimore Development Corporation, you have to lay out all these deals in front of the people. These are what we talked about. This is how they're being negotiated. Make them very public, and that might go a long way to assuage what the public feels is lopsided in the developer's favor.
I think that we definitely, when it comes to the way that we're doing business with the Baltimore Development Corporation, we are in the midst of a restructuring of BDC. And as mentioned when I think I was here before, if not the last time, the time before, mm-hmm. The issue of increased transparency in BDC has not fallen on deaf ears with me. I know that we need to find a way while protecting, I guess, the individual businesses, you know, that they have proprietary information. So we have to find a way to balance, to get more transparency while still protecting, you know, the business deals. So, yes, we are restructuring BDC, and finding a way to create more transparency is something that's important to me while we do it.
As I promised, let's go back to the phones and the emails here. I turn this over to our listeners at 410-319-8888. Adam, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark and Mayor Rawlings-Blake.
Welcome.
I'm a longtime resident of Baltimore. Been here over 65 years. I pay a water bill of $125 every 3 months. Neighbors of mine, friends of mine actually across the city line in Randallstown pay about $30 a month, $30 every 3 months. I'm concerned that the city is providing services to the counties, and yet it is not being compensated adequately by residents of the county. The Department of Public Works is, of course, repairing water main breaks of various kinds. Why is it that the city is footing a bill to this degree when, in fact, the county is getting services from the city and, of course, is not paying their fair share?
This question comes up a great deal.
And one thing I hope that you do, we need to have like this Baltimore Myths show, and I hope that you get Director Al Fox and Rudy Chow that runs our water department to come in. Baltimore City residents and everyone that we provide water to pay the exact same rate for water. The difference is that other jurisdictions bill for that separately. So part of their water bill comes in a water bill like we get, and part of it is attached to their property tax bill. So if you're comparing your water bill to someone else's water bill, you're not going to see their whole bill, because unless they show you, you know, what they're paying on their property tax bill, which, you know, some of that is included, you're not going to see the whole thing. So it is the exact same rate. The billing is different, and I would love, love, love for you to have devote an hour with Director Fox and Rudy Chow to talk not just about that issue, but about the issues that we face. I'm on the U.S. Conference of Mayors. I'm the co-chair of the U.S. Conference of Mayors Water Council. And Baltimore, like many other cities around this country, is facing having to make significant investment in water, wastewater infrastructure projects. And while there's been a lot of attention paid on the road projects, bridge projects, there are jurisdictions around this country that may be bankrupted by needing to meet EPA restrictions and keep up with aging water infrastructure. And that's something that I'm fighting for, that we get more assistance from the federal government, meeting those requirements and making those infrastructure, water and wastewater infrastructure improvements. And that is an important topic. That is a topic that will be important in our country for a long time to come. We're blessed in Baltimore and in Maryland that we're not having water fights, fights over rights to water like they are in some of the other western states. But the issue of water and meeting those requirements, this is going to be around, and we need to know more about it and talk more about it.
410-319-8888. Adam, thanks for that call. And Julian, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Mayor Rawlings, Blake, and Mark. I want to thank you for taking my call today, and I also want to commend you for getting the callers through the queue pretty quickly. It's almost near real time that you're able to address all the callers.
My question
is somewhat personal, but it's very concerning to me. I'm a retired military officer, senior officer, and former government civil service employee. And I've most recently applied to the Baltimore City school system to work with the schools to develop a program which will foster the hiring of the right people at the right time in the communities in order to help the schools address the No Child Left Behind mandates that are coming up within the next year and a half. And one of the things that concerned me is that during that process, there were panel interviews held for the candidates. And number one, they started late, didn't afford the candidates the full time that was initially allotted for those panel interviews. And secondly, I wonder how it's possible that they could overlook someone with the sorts of credentials that I have. Just as an example, bachelor's in biology, dual master's and PhD with a teaching certification for the state of Maryland, program and project management experience, and recruiting experience, the kind of thing that you need in the program that was that is being proposed for the Baltimore City public school system. It troubles me that you know, you got folks that want to come in and work with you at a at minimal pay and do a job like that, and you simply overlook them. What are you looking for?
So, again, thanks for your call, and as former military, thank you very much for your service. I'm not sure what the school system was looking for. They hire independently of the city. And if you feel that you were treated unfairly, I would love to look into it for you. I don't know if you're still on the line, and we can get your information. That aside, this, you know, when you started off by saying this is a personal issue, it's a personnel issue of the school board, which without any other information, I really can't comment on.
Maybe we can do that next time that Andres Alonso is on the show, Julian. 410-319-8888. Andre, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark and Madam Mayor.
Good evening.
I'm a homeowner here in Baltimore, and I just wanted to touch base really quick on two issues. Number one being the property tax. And I know, Madam Mayor, you have heard a lot about the property tax. And I'm looking at it from the perspective of I've decided to make an investment in Baltimore by buying a home, raising my kids here in Baltimore City, and attending Baltimore City public schools. And the caveat to that is that I think I really know that my property taxes are a considerable amount of money. They're approaching almost $3,000 a year. Now, my question is, when a developer comes to Baltimore and say, oh, I want to invest in Baltimore City, we offer them all these great big discounts and on the property and all these incentives to invest in Baltimore. But my thinking process is, if they really wanted to invest in Baltimore and they think that Baltimore is a good place to put their money, Baltimore is in need of revenue, then why are we constantly giving away sources of revenue for 10, 15, or even 20 years? And then on my second question, Madam Mayor, is that Baltimore also has a high population of African-American men who are coming home from incarcerations with criminal backgrounds, and they're really being marginalized because of the criminal background, and they're really not given a chance a lot of times to integrate back into society. And I wonder if you had any plans for addressing that problem, because it's a considerable amount of men and a considerable amount of resources to allow just to sit on the sidelines of society.
Thank you so much for that question, Andre.
So I'm going to start in reverse order. With respect to our reentry community, it is important to me. I have a director for human services who focuses on ways that we can assist individuals who've been incarcerated to make sure that they have opportunities to come back into society and be productive. There's need in the community for people who have been incarcerated, for veterans that come back and have challenges, for people living with disabilities, you know, all of these things, that all of these populations, we work very hard to integrate them. We also, working with, I believe it was Councilwoman Sharon Green Middleton, changed the way that we take our application process from the city to make it more advantageous or make it more beneficial for people who might have a record that, you know, for certain positions, well, for all positions, it's the question isn't even asked on the application. And then if you move to the next one, depending on what that position is, you might need to get a clearance. But there are many jobs that a history of, you know, of being in the justice system does not prevent you from working for the city. And by taking it, that question off, it's opened the door for many people.
And his second question. First question.
With respect, I mean, I think we touched on this a little bit before. You know, the issue of property taxes is something that's important to me because I understand that people are hurting. People are stretched thin as we're trying to grow our way out of the Great Recession. And when you see a tax bill of a couple thousand dollars and you're struggling, it doesn't create, I don't think, empathy in the need for anyone else that you think might be getting another advantage. That being said, these are economic development tools that are creating Mondawmin, that's creating Belvedere Square, that's creating Frankfort Estates, that's creating Clipper Mill. You know, these are economic development tools that are strengthening neighborhoods, creating jobs. In the same way, as I mentioned before, we are providing incentives. I think, as I mentioned before, I think it's over 50 different ways that you can create incentives. Any person, any citizen, to purchase a home in Baltimore. So we are creating incentives for the average citizen. We are providing incentives to grow our neighborhoods, to strengthen our neighborhoods, and to create jobs. And those two, you don't you can do both of those things. And continue to move the city forward.
I'd love to have a follow-up, but I promise these listeners I named that we get on the air. And mm-hmm. So, Danielle, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Mark. Hi, Mayor Rawlings-Blake. I have a question. I'm very indifferent about this campaign. Usually I'm a person that has my mind made up this close to the election. And I still haven't made up my mind because I don't really see a very strong candidate. I really don't see any evidence of change as far as moving the city forward in areas of developing the neighborhoods. Crime is very important when it comes to change, but for someone like me who doesn't live in a crime-infested neighborhood, that's not the focal point of my priority when I'm trying to get into someone to vote for or someone to lead the city for the next 4 years. So I'm very interested in what the plan is to develop the city as far as the abandoned houses, because unfortunately, if I drive out of my neighborhood and drive through the city, I have to drive through blocks and blocks of abandoned neighborhoods. Or if I have people visit me from out of town, I have to show them a city that looks very dilapidated and has been described as dilapidated from people that come from other parts of the country. I'm interested in what the plan is to help with the vacant houses in our area, as well as the plan to build jobs, because unfortunately, I help people look for jobs. And many of the jobs that pay money are outside of the city, going towards the D.C. metro area. Right. So I'm curious as to what that's going to, what plan we have for that.
Okay. So thank you very much for the question. And I'm not going to be able to tell you my whole strategy for blight elimination or vacant housing. I would encourage you to look on the city's website, the housing website. It's all described. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about it and then talk about jobs and hope that you take a look at the plan because it is getting attention. My vacancy value received national attention at the U.S. Conference of Mayors annual meeting. I just had a chance to present the plan at the White House complex before Obama administration officials who were very impressed and called it innovative government. It is a multi-pronged strategy that respects the role of the marketplace. It cuts through red tape, and it makes a way neighborhood by neighborhood. And I talked about this before when we talked about the crime strategies and how you have to be neighborhood specific in order to be effective. Neighborhood by neighborhood, different strategies to help us move forward. So we are creating incentives. We created a number of incentives for individuals who want to purchase homes, additional incentives if you work for the city. We also cut through the red tape. We cut the transaction time by 2/3 if you want to purchase a property, city-owned property. For absentee landowners, working with the city council, I was able to get a $900 citation that we are using to target absentee owners and force them to either fix up their property or to sell it to someone who will. We're also doing demolition in certain areas where, in order for there to be new development, we have to clear the houses that are almost falling in on themselves. We're doing a lot of that all over the city. I just was in Park Heights in a community that has a master plan and a strong history and so many committed neighbors, and one of the community leaders was on the excavator knocking the house down that had been a blight in her community. I get very frustrated when I see the number of vacant houses that we have in our city, and that's one of the reasons why I focused as soon as I became mayor on restructuring the way that we did business in the housing department to get us to a place where we could have an impact on reducing the number of vacant houses. We didn't get here overnight. There's over 50 years of disinvestment. But I know with smart strategies and putting those resources behind them, we can improve.
So we've got a couple of quick emails in here. A lot of people have written in.
She asked about jobs, too. Do you want to?
Yeah, okay.
It's your choice.
Well, let me try to get this question.
Okay.
Jeff has written in saying, why has the mayor turned a cold shoulder to the southeast, Fells Point in particular? Please don't deny it. Whatever happened or did not happen before concerning live entertainment, it's over. Lots of people here are not satisfied with lack of attention, concern, or representation we receive. The city depends on our tax dollars, and parking tickets are issued 24/7. But when we ask for services, we get ignored. Please don't dodge the question, Jeff.
Jeff, I'm certainly sorry that you feel like you're being ignored. If you have your contact information and specific issues, I would love to follow up with you. To say that I've abandoned the Fells Point area, I think, is a mischaracterization. My administration spends a lot of time in those communities, and while I'm probably not going to call Jeff one of my supporters, I have a lot of support in that area, and it's because I've been sensitive to the needs outside of, think what you want about the live entertainment bill. There's some people that are for it, some people that are against it. That being said, if you don't like it, it doesn't mean that I'm abandoning that area. I have a lot of support in that area.
How much time do we have left? 1 minute? 2 minutes? All right. Yeah, only 30 seconds, so we actually don't have time for these other questions. Mayor Stephan Rawlings-Blake, thank you so much for coming in for a second round. As we approach Election Day on September the 13th.
Thank you for having me again.
We'll see what happens after the election. Good luck.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back. We're going to jump into a conversation that we had some time ago with Claude Anshin, Vietnam veteran who turned into a Buddhist monk in a movie being made about his life. And then we'll be looking at the tar sands demonstrations taking place in front of the White House and why 1,000 people are being arrested to stop tar sands and asking President Obama not to allow it to happen. We'll be right back with all that and more. Stay with us.